Mighty One, something.
Wizard, Gary the Sword, Rip off the ancients, blaming the tavern. Behold, yeah.
Welcome to the Glowburn Podcast. My name's Julian Burnick.
And my name's Jay Brickman.
And my name's Jeff Gold.
And today we're doing an episode about Dungeons & Dragons Crow Classics.
So that happened. Well, we've made it two-thirds of the way through the year. Most of us are stuck in the land of online gaming for the foreseeable future. There's a slight chill to the air in some regions, and you all know the impending nightmare that awaits us. It's the revenge of the mailbag!
Dun dun dun!
I'm Judge Jet. With me tonight are my fearless co-hosts, Judge Julian.
Hello!
And Judge Jeff.
Hey everyone, this is Judge Jeff, and I want to say thank you to Harrison Hunt for that hilarious, insane little intro that we had this episode. Harrison Hunt, you are my personal hero. When I grew up, I want to be you.
And happy belated birthday.
And Harrison, we really appreciate your customized intros that you've agreed to provide us for each episode going forward. So really look forward to hearing the next one. Thanks so much, man.
Oh, thanks for reminding me. I got to sign that contract. So with that, off to the tavern, shall we?
Welcome, friends. Good to see you.
I only had one drink to calm my nerves.
Innkeeper, a drink of your most expensive.
Tavern talk.
Okay, guys, it's been since like mid-July that we actually talked about what we're doing in gaming lately. It's a little embarrassing, but why don't we just stick with the past couple of weeks? Start with you, Jeff.
All right. Well, if we want to look just from like the last time we recorded an episode, even though we didn't discuss, we didn't go into the tavern in that episode, it's been 3 weeks since we recorded. And very predictably in those 3 weeks, I've had three sessions of my OSE game and three sessions of Blades Against Bandwidth. The one nice thing about quarantine is I actually have very regular gaming in right now, which I'm very appreciative of. I've been running this old school adventures game, and we've got some like just really wacky characters. We've got a vampire, a wind mage, a black priest, a strangler, along with a cleric and a ranger. And we're just having a lot of fun. We're exploring the wilderlands of high fantasy, but I'm throwing like a bunch of just like OSR and old school stuff in there and stealing things from Dragon Magazine and Different Worlds and Imagine Magazine and things like that. And that's just been a blast. We've had 13 sessions now and 13 character deaths. So we're averaging about one per session.
Nice.
Seems about appropriate. So that's been a blast. I've also been playing in Blades Against Bandwidth. And in that one, we just wrapped up in Curse of the Kingspire. And so now in next week's session, which will have probably already aired by the time you're hearing this, we're going to be heading on into town and looking for some new adventure. But Forrester Longbranch, the murder hobbit, a hobbit, not a halfling. I'm not half of anything. he has been... kicking butt and taking names. So he's been a lot of fun to play. But that's what I've been up to.
Awesome. Yeah. Julian?
Well, I did some gaming for Gen Con online and had a couple good sessions. I ran Mute Crawl Classics, my little installation 665 game, which went over pretty well. I also... played in a couple games that, the less said, the better. And it really made me, well, you know, just being honest. And no names are being named. They weren't DCC and anybody knows, except for one famous person. But he wasn't. Anyway. But anyway.
They all live in Canada. You don't know them.
But I will say it did make me appreciate how random it is to sign up for a game at Gen Con and conversely, when you do it at like a Goodman Con, like Cyclops Con or one of these ones that we do, the level of judging I feel like is pretty high. It just made me appreciate that a little bit, because I'm sure there may be exceptions and, you know, people have different tastes and all that stuff. But yeah, anyway, enough said. But I had fun. And then at the end of that weekend, my buddy Matt Tull ran a MCC game first, which was a lot of fun, where I got to play a shaman of, I always want to call him Mazinga, but you know, the other guy, the war AI. And that was good times. And then, and he's also run a Star Crawl game for us, since then. It was a lot of fun. Bring Your Daughter to the Slaughter. That was a good time, I recommended it could be a Dark Trails game, actually, because it's built on a rail line and it's kind of a horror-themed game. So it was good. And at Gen Con, one of the highlights, I had a bunch of good players. I collected a lot of good feedback on my MCC adventure that I'm slowly cooking. But I also met a guy named Christopher Rick, and he has done some stuff with Two Old Guys Games, I believe is the name of their company or print or whatever you want to call it.
Oh, yeah.
And he's got this thing called the Salty Funnel, which is like an adventure path, nautical theme that gets you on a boat. And then there's like an adventure on the boat. Then there's a short adventure you can do on the boat. And then they're going to print these, what he's calling 2-hour tales, which are like very modular things you can do, because even 4 hours is too long, Chris thinks. So he was like, I wanted to do something you could even just drop in and do even faster. And which I think is a good idea in the virtual era, you know? So I was intrigued by that. He sent me some links and I'll put them in the show notes. One of them was the first of the 2-hour tales, as he calls them, is like the Ziggurat of the Maiden Knights or something like that. No, it's Ziggurat of the Mega Maiden, and it's very clearly like an Iron Maiden thing.
Yes.
So they're very fun, and definitely I think you could drop these in and play them in 2 to 3 hours. And so if you're into that kind of thing, give it a look. Chris was a real nice guy, and it was great to make his acquaintance and stuff.
That was a nice subtle preview there, Julian.
Well, you're welcome.
Christopher Rick also ran that Ziggurat game for tabletop or TTRPG Pickup Con number 3, which happened in mid-August. And yeah, from what I saw and heard of that as a bystander, that was pretty hilarious. I ran a Lankmar game for that, and it's just a little free weekend event that's happening monthly. I definitely have the notes for you for the show notes for that one.
Hmm.
We've had to take a couple of weeks off from our Shutter Mountains campaign. Something about the sketch is having to relocate Haley up to college and all that, so we got put on hiatus for a week or so. So I haven't had any good Shudfolk action lately. But we did come to a finale with the War Crawl mini campaign that Mike Curtis was running. No winners have been announced yet, and it chaps me so badly. We haven't even gotten our victory points for the very last game. But I will say, since we're allowed to talk smack a little bit now after the fact, I never thought I would live through an encounter with a dragon rolled up from the DCC book, much less do it twice. So that was pretty cool, pretty awesome.
Nice.
I hope to never do it again. I also wrapped up with an editing project that was probably the most intensive feat of organization I've had to deal with close to ever. So that'll be worth the Scooby snacks.
Very nice.
And speaking of Haley, I forgot to mention that sadly on Blades Against Bandwidth, Val has had to step down.
But
Haley Sketch has joined our ranks.
Awesome.
She's done 2 episodes with us now and is most likely depending on her college schedule, but is most likely going to be continuing on with us, which I'm very excited about.
That will make a lot of people very happy.
Yeah, she's been a blast.
Did she take over the cleric that
that Val was running?
That Val was running, yeah.
No, she's running her own. She's running her own cleric.
Oh, so what happened to Val's? Did you guys write her off or sacrifice her or what?
Yeah, it happened between adventures, and she just decided to stay in town and kind of work on her own projects.
Oh, she didn't get lost in a dungeon or something?
No.
Okay, it's nice to know that you guys, you know, didn't just leave her somewhere.
But also real quick before we dive in, there's another thing I would love our listeners to know about, which is for my OSC game, you can do this for DCC too. I've been using the Judges Guild product, the Treasury of Archaic Names, to come up with character names. And the names that we've been randomly generating are ridiculous. For example, right now, one of our current characters is Kermit the Farcical, and that came from there. One of some of our dead characters include Bleeding Breeder Adiva, Amina wow. Hindgape, Sweaty Hag, Gwenda the Pigeon, and in one of our backup characters, we've got Pornographic Finnegan. So those are all names that came from the Judges Guild product, the Treasury of Archaic Names. Highly recommended. And those names, they're very archaic, right?
Are these like column A, column B type things? Or
kind of, yeah. Yep.
Oh, cool. Sounds really good. Yeah.
That's it.
Very 70s Judges Guild or something.
Yes. Right.
Yeah.
Well, on that note, I have a feeling we've got a couple more recommendations to be given. So let's hit this mailbag before it hits us.
I call upon the flame to summon you.
Who'll deliver the message for me?
I came here to give you these facts.
Summon email.
And for anybody interested in trivia, we just passed episode 100, and this is our 10th mailbag episode. So I think we're spacing things out fairly decently.
Hmm.
And I did happen to roll a crit on this summoning, so let's start chewing through those if you don't mind. Looks like the first one's got Jeff's name on it.
All right, this one comes in from Kaylee Chaos. Hey, judges. So I'm pretty new to DCC, or at least she was when she sent us this email, and to your podcast, both of which I've been enjoying. But I'm definitely not new to gaming. I've been tossing the dice since I was about 8, which means since 78. I've known Judge Jen for over 2 decades, and we met through gaming friends. Anyway, I was listening to the discussion about alignment languages. I've always seen them as similar to Thieves' Cant, like a series of code words, doublespeak, gestures, and insinuations that someone who knew the language could understand in the midst of an otherwise mundane conversation. I'm not saying that's how it's supposed to be, only how I always thought of it, and no one seemed to have a similar understanding during the show. I did, however, like the suggestion that they could be a part of magical languages. I'd like to think that using an alignment language in your magic would change how it works or give it a particular characteristic. I wonder if someone could make alignment magic variants of spells that work just like mercurial magic, but have slightly different manifestations and such tailored to the alignment language in question. I imagine someone speaking chaotic would cast spells quite differently from someone who used a lawful language in their arcane practices. Love the show. Keep up your good work. Kaylee Chaos.
Hmm. That was a nice Casey Kasem voice there.
Well, thanks, Kaylee. I think that's a great suggestion. I would love to see somebody do that in some kind of a third-party product where you've got your chaos and law takes on the different spells. I think that'd be cool.
I think that'd be really cool when it came to seeing how things manifested, especially if two different casters are casting the same thing at each other, like in a spell duel situation, but they would sound different to the bystander. That's just kind of hard to convey, especially in online gaming these days. Otherwise people just see it as a not so cinematic static scene.
And I think another thing that you could do to kind of embrace this concept is instead of maybe randomly rolling your spell manifestations, maybe you and your judge can kind of come up with like nice chaotic manifestations of your spells.
Yeah, ooh. I think it would be pretty interesting if you had a three-column mercurial magic table that had a lawful column, a neutral column, and a chaotic column. They may not really, I mean, maybe the chaotic one has a lot of results and the lawful one has three results, or, you know, lawful ends up being different. But at any rate, it would be pretty interesting if your actual mercurial magic and or manifestations were different based on your alignment, the same way like thieves skill bonuses are. So pretty interesting. Somebody could do a little, you know, that sounds like a Don Stroud, James Posnell type supplement, doesn't it? Like alignment magic.
And Don, once you start working on it, my only request is that there is no 40 to 60 no effect portion of the table. I need 100 mercurial effects three times. So I need 300 mercurial effects from you. You can do it. I know you've got it in you.
And while you're at it, go ahead and make manifestations for each of the spells. Make three columns for those two.
Yes. Because
that would be awesome. I love that I've got 8 options for magic missile already, but that's all for like neutral.
Wait, should we do it with corruption too?
Well, for sure.
In for a penny, right?
And corruptions may also be alignment specific. But I think, I believe in Hobonomicon, Doug had and team had already done, like, filled in the 40 to 60 gap somewhere.
Oh, good.
So, and as well as they did a bunch, I think the last one, they did a bunch of new spells and stuff as well.
And so what I'm hearing is that we've got to get someone together to just compile everything, right?
Yeah. Well, I've already got a D1200 spell list that Goad put together. So
that's true too. Yeah.
I'm putting a lot of links in these show notes, aren't I?
Okay. This is going to be fun.
Okay. Hey, let's speed it up for you. Yeah. Let's just speed it up and really keep it quick here.
All right. Then read fast, dude.
All right. You ready for the next one?
Yeah.
Y'all ready for this?
Here we go. This one comes to us from the hot, dry California right now.
You're telling us to hurry things up?
Yes. Mr.
Thank you.
Well, where's the egg timer when you need it, right? So this one comes to us from Stephen Newton, my pal and yours. And by the way, funny story about Stephen. This is true and semi-interesting. We're going to be doing our prisoner exchange adventures for Bride of Cyclops Con coming up in October. I'll be running one of Stephen's new playtests, and he'll be running one of mine. So
awesome.
That will be fun. And he'll be also running his and all that anyway.
You know, I was positive there was an email in here somewhere.
Yeah. You know, when I met Stephen at GaryCon, like 3 years. So Stephen says, Judges Jay, I love you more than I love Spotted Cow at the Grand Geneva or Oxford Commons. You are making podcasts great again.
Oh,
really?
You had me at the first.
Yeah. Question, observation. I don't think the second level wizard spell, Arcane Affinity, gets enough love. It basically allows wizards to become class specialists, illusionists, necromancers, etc. I have no data at all to back up the following claim, but who needs to back up any claims these days with data anyhow? But I suspect most gamers probably would feel this is a wasted spell and prefer something that does offensive damage. Is this spell really something useful at the table, or is it just a way to prevent people from writing splat books? Love you more than GaryCon table service, Steven.
Oh. Yeah.
And I would say that more... I would say very clearly, you know, I just went back and reread it, and I would say that it is a way to replicate the second edition School of Magic specialist rules. Nothing more, nothing less. And it's a pretty elegant way of doing that. You roll your result. It's kind of like Find Familiar, where you get a permanent result. You roll the D20 and the spell check, and then you get your result, and you can pick one type of magic, like water magic or fire magic or necromancy or whatever. And depending on your result, you might get an extra die, a +1 die on those spells, but have to take a -1 die on a different type.
Or you might get a free spell, but you are going to be cursed and get one less spell or get a lower die spell with other spells. And it's that kind of trade-offs, very similar to the trade-offs in the second edition Magic Specialist rules. So,
which means ultimately you can end up doing a lot more damage with it. You'll end up being more powerful with it. So, yeah, it's like a school of magic's focus, if you will.
Think about rolling a d24 with massive spell burn going.
Yeah.
You know, right.
It can get, get pretty good.
I think the downside here is that I've never been a high enough level wizard or elf to be able to know arcane affinity. I always roll lower in the chart and end up with like invisibility or something.
It's
or
really
scorching
weird.
Ray.
Well, that's why you play by goad rules, and at first level you have access to all level spells, including arcane affinity. Because why can't you be a first level necromancer? Come on.
Okay, I might play in a Jeff game.
but I gotta say, I feel like this doesn't come up on Purple Sorcerer pregens, which I use quite frequently. And I don't know if that's design or just by chance or what.
Well, I mean, Find Familiar comes up, though.
Yes. Yeah. No, I would see a rationale for not putting it in there. I don't know. I've generated many a familiar in the first 5 minutes of a con game, so it's not that bad.
But thank you for the reminder. Those of us generating PCs for our character stacks, the proverbial stacks that we hand out at conventions, we should remember to put this in and give the players some sort of benefit or at least some variance.
Also, John Marr, I want to say I'm very sorry on behalf of Julian for his horrible lies that he's telling on this podcast. I just pulled up Purple Sorcerer and created a random grimoire for a 10th level character, and one of my random spells is Arcane Affinity.
Woot!
There you go.
So Julian is a dirty, dirty liar, and I'm very sorry, John Marr.
Wow. Well, I mean, maybe it's just because I do almost always do first level characters. You know, I've done a lot of first level playtesting, so maybe I'm just not hitting.
We need to branch out. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. We need to branch out of our comfort zones too, as judges.
But one area that I think is a good opportunity for growth with con judges is I feel like we really rush through the gathering of the pregens, and there are so many con games where I'm handed a character sheet, and you guys know I love to play the wizard. And I look at the sheet and like, I have Find Familiar as one of my spells. Do I have a familiar? I don't know. Patron Bond is one of my spells. Do I get to start the patron? I don't know. And I've never had Arcane Affinity on my character sheet, but if it did, I'd want to know, do I already have some kind of an affinity? So I would say maybe a good takeaway from this is if you have the time to really like spend a little bit of extra time with your pregens, if your wizards have these kind of spells like Patron Bond, Find Familiar, Arcane Affinity, define what kind of abilities they already have based on already having those spells before you hand that character sheet to somebody at the con game.
Yeah, I mean, the only downside would be declaring what alignment that wizard's going to be with their familiar, because the alignment has a big part in the creation of the familiar.
Well, usually with pregens, alignment's already on there.
Yeah. Oh, that's true. That's true. If you're rolling them on Purple Sorcerer, that's true.
No, it's funny because, I love Pelgrain Press games, for instance. And if you give somebody a pregen for Pelgrain is a totally, completely different system, modern horror system, very soft and not even as crunchy as old school games and stuff like that. But I mean, you hand somebody a pregen for a Pelgrain game, generally speaking, and you've got their whole backstory, their personality, everything is defined. Even though it's rules light, there's going to be a lot of personality info, family, relationships, dot, dot, dot. But when we hand somebody a DCC pregen, it's numbers.
Mm-hmm.
It's, you know, a collection of, it's a few, you know, things in a sack and numbers.
It so, helps people know. Not get attached to the characters.
Well, maybe, it would be kind of fun except for the extra work, but to actually, you know, go in and be like, okay, you know, you've got six fingers on your left hand and you are the best, stone hurler in your village and blah, 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 blah.
Oh, yeah.
But I don't know.
My favorites are the ones where they list, okay, this is how you feel about all these other characters that are at the table.
Oh, right, right, right.
But yeah, that is a ton of work.
Yeah.
So speaking of alignment and even more work, Julian, your friend Gary has written in.
Yes, he has.
He says, after listening to the episode where a question came in on alignment languages, I had a memory sparked of an article I read a long time ago in Dragon Magazine about languages, and I set off on a search to see if it mentioned alignment languages. Of course it did, although briefly. And then he proceeds to give us the bibliography of which issue, incidentally, number 66 of Dragon Magazine. The article title is Language Rules Leave Lots of Room for Creativity in Your Campaign. And the quote given to us is, an alignment language is defined by the DMG as a special set of signs, signals, gestures, and words for limited communication only. This is a big old quote here, and we're running short on time, Gary. I love you, but he goes a bit further to hint that alignment languages are a form of jargon. Alignment language could be considered jargon. For example, if you walked into a room full of engineers and they were discussing their work, you might understand about 70% of what they were talking about. Another 30% would be technical jargon that you had no clue what it was. The same could be said of any occasion or occupation or hobby that has developed its own catchphrases or special language bits. My take on alignment languages is that maybe it's not specific to an alignment per se, but more a region, culture, or even a religion. It's a specific set of terms and phrases that only certain groups would understand or use, a secret tongue, as it were. Take it for what you will and keep rolling those dice.
All right. So, sounds good.
Yeah, I cut out a bit of the quote because someone who wants to read Dragon Magazine issue number 66 can go read it in its entirety. But fairly similar to what Kaylee was touching on, I feel.
Yeah, I think these are all good ideas, but I like the, I think he comes closest to, I'm fascinated by the idea that it's totally not like the real world at all. And if you're chaotic evil, you speak a secret evil language with other evil people. I mean, I just think that's just a cool thought experiment. What would that world be like? But anyway.
Yeah. Nice. All right,
and
next.
I also just want to quickly say, so Julian, perhaps I have besmirched your character, because yes, Arcane Affinity seems to show up in the random grimoire.
Uh-oh.
But right now I have been randomly generating a 10th level wizard with 18 intelligence. Over and over and over again, all during Gary's very long email. And not one of them has had Arcane Affinity show up as one of the spells in their spell list.
Wow, if you were just as gracious about Geesh, you know, it would be, I mean, that's all I would ever really.
Geesh. Geesh.
Geesh.
Geesh. Okay, from now on, I'll call it Geesh.
I guess we should go on to the next thing.
The star. Okay, perfect. So, yes, next one.
Just remember, what's good for the Geesh is...
So, this one comes in from our pal, Tony Hogard. Greetings, judges of the most spellburnery spellburn podcast that ever spellburned. I appreciate your timely episode on online gaming. Online gaming. I have never been very keen on online RPG sessions, but now I'm figuring out running games for my middle school students. They were rather squirrely even before being trapped in their homes for weeks. I've lost two of my best tools for keeping the kids focused, eye contact and looming, as you noted. Also, I often just tossed the correct die to the players rather than wait for them to figure it out. The Crawler's Companion should help with dice rolls at least. I've been playing in several Cyclops Con games, so I hope to steal ideas and tricks from the more experienced online judges. I also love that authors and publishers are making products available for free. Gamers are a very special community. Thanks again for the great discussions. See you around the interwebs, Tony Hogard. Well, Tony, thank you for the kind words. Glad our episode helped you out.
All hail Le Petit Miracle Claude. He's in the Shutter Mountains game with us. He's
yes.
been the one hit point wonder for every level.
Very nice. And
yes.
Yeah. Tony is a good guy. I did a bunch of gaming with him and his daughter, Em, and some of the Dying Earth stuff a lot in CyclopsCon and stuff. So,
you know, I was going through some old stuff and realized he was in one of my games 4 years ago. Yeah, this community is pretty awesome.
All right.
Yeah.
I'm going to reach into the bag. It looks like we've got Mr. Is this Tanglebones? Chris Tanglebones Lauricella. Is that what Hobbsy calls him, I believe? All right. Chris Lauricella says, "Hey, Judges Jay and Julian, I hope this missive finds you, your cats, and your other loved ones well. I wanted to drop a line to the crew because, number one, the recent episode underscores that despite successful virtual games, I really miss the crew. Number two, I wanted to share some of my musings on virtual gaming. When Gary Kahn announced the shift, I quickly shifted my games over to Roll20. This was quite the learning experience that backed my slate of games down from 6 to 3 games and limited seating down to 5 from 7. If I was to botch my role, I wanted to only disappoint 5, not 7 of my fellow gamers. From there, I jumped in with a lot of hope and begged for kindness from my players. I chose Roll20 because I find that having a map as a focal point and it harkens back to our OSR roots. I do this in my face-to-face games as well, but where I do map, I choose to run all combat as theater of the mind. So the map is a focal point, but not a grid, if you will. So Roll20 works pretty well for my needs, and I've continued to use it for some other DCC silliness I'm running on an ongoing basis until the world returns to normalcy. With a few games under my belt and making many small adjustments to the games, I still find that a typical group will get through about 2/3 to 1/2 of the material we might get through in a face-to-face session. Two nuts and bolts things I've done to help improve pacing are: simplified initiative, so it's done by size. That's a pretty good idea. Number two, I provide a number of macros for my players so they have all the dice they might need on their dashboard. Small things, but they do help. And if you played Roll20, there's a dice roller embedded in the thing, and you can set up complicated dice macros and stuff if you like that sort of thing, or you're capable. Going forward, my best advice is conceptual. Rather than try to deliver a face-to-face RPG experience online, I think we as GMs should simply try to offer the online RPG experience. The difference is subtle but important. There are some areas that the online game makes much easier. Handouts and maps are easy examples. However, there are other areas where the online medium makes things much more difficult. Here, combat is the easiest example. Even with the aforementioned macros and keeping the table size small, combat can still drag. So rather than simply porting a game whole cloth over from pen and paper to digital, a GM should think about where the digital medium excels and where it falls short. From there, they should be willing to edit their games accordingly. Can be tough, but it is a critical part of the creative process. My 2 cents, in service, Chris, TPK Lauricella. Please note the Oxford comma after cats in the first paragraph. Thank you, Chris. Our editor thanks you, I'm sure.
I salute you, sir.
I don't have a lot to add except to say well done. I like your suggestions quite a bit.
I also appreciate the Oxford commas. I know for a fact I am not one who is going to be doing anything through Roll20. Not my style. But I agree with you, Chris. I think there's a tendency for people to think real black and white with this kind of stuff. And it's like, if I'm going to use Roll20, then I have to like port the entire adventure in there and create all the fog of war and do all of this and all of that. And it's like, there is a huge gray area in between, and you are welcome to just do a portion of that. You don't have to do the whole damn thing that way. And I think that's a nice reminder.
I will say I enjoy playing on Roll20 much more than I enjoy the concept of running on Roll20. I've come to appreciate the fact that I can click a button for my spell checks or my skill checks or my luck checks. You know, as long as all of the values are correct, bam, there it is. Tells me what the absolute total is after all of the modifications, modifiers and whatnot. Even keeps track of what the current disapproval rating is for clerics, and that I find really helpful. Even on this war crawl thing that Mr. Curtis did for us, we were in Roll20, but the maps, I kid you not, consisted of like, here's a square, here's your building, here's another square, there's a door.
Perfect.
So definitely conceptual only.
I'm not a Roll20 guy, but it can definitely be, anything could be good if somebody really knows what they're doing and is a good GM and makes it work. So no problem there. I will say, though, the worst thing you could do, to give a negative example, at Gen Con, one of my games that I played in, again, not a DCC game, but they actually generated the characters for a pretty obscure system at the table.
So that you could learn the mechanics for it better?
I have no idea what they were thinking, but it was a way worse idea even than it seemed, because there were plenty of people and it was like the worst logistical nightmare to try to do that. You can't pull somebody aside and be like, you know, he can't kind of linger with the guy who needs the most help and let the, you know, I mean, it was really frustrating.
Gotta have quote-unquote books for everybody, right?
Yeah.
That's
difficult.
Yeah.
It was, yeah.
Rookie move for sure. I hope he was a rookie.
Yeah.
Enough said. So, yeah. Thank you, Chris. Good advice. I especially like the initiative thing. Good idea.
Oh, yeah. The initiative idea is great. I've actually used a similar version where I just have everybody roll and everybody who got above me can act first and then everybody who got below me will act after the monsters. And then we just re-roll that each round. And it's a nice, simple way of doing it that also keeps it kind of interesting and exciting.
Yeah, I like that too.
Yeah. I will say the one thing that I enjoy, like generally likes the dice rolling component of Roll20. I always prefer having physical dice in my hand. So if I can, I'd rather just do that. But the thing that I really like as a player in Roll20 is I do think the fog of war effect is cool, because I know that, like, as a player and as a judge and we're walking through a dungeon, I'm never like fully correctly envisioning what my like 20 or 30 feet that I can see with my torches. So it actually does add like a nice bit of suspense with that fog of war, that like I can only see like just like part of this hallway. That's kind of cool.
Yeah. Some people do provide all of the whistles and bells, like Andy Markham. Yeah.
Sweet.
All right. Well,
should we move on?
Thank you for the email, Chris. Our next one comes from, oh, I hate butchering names. I'm so sorry.
Daniel. I believe I know how to say it.
I got the Daniel down.
I believe it's Daniel Neugebauer.
We'll go with it.
Well, Judge Daniel, write us in and tell us how we did, how Jeff did.
In the meantime, he says, hi, Spellbirders. Did any of your groups reach a level where the characters got a castle, a wizard tower, or a whole barony? How would you make the managing and ruling over a barony fun and in the tone of DCC? Stay safe and greetings from Germany, for those who couldn't guess. I'll bounce to you, Julian.
So I have done a couple things like this, and I've done, you know, a fair amount in other old school systems and a little less in DCC because we haven't got to super high levels generally. But my old pal Trevor Hartman had kind of stumbled in randomly to a thing where he ended up a nobleman in a city. He had a little island estate in the big Loch Noir Lake. And it was kind of a funny thing that he didn't even earn, but rather just randomly got in an adventure. But I will say, as far as I'm concerned, you could dispense entirely with any mechanics about it and purely use it as a means of pulling people into adventures, right? Because the thing goes broke and you got to get money so you can save your estate, or, you know, one of the other noblemen is messing with you, or, you know, you have to have an arranged marriage to, you know, make an alliance or whatever. I mean, just use it. I mean, I was just reading King Cull stories by Robert Howard, which are actually some of my ones that I like best of Howard's. And, you know, Cull isn't, you know, there's no bean counting in Cull, right? He's not discussing the corn harvest. He's, you know, he's doing Cull stuff, right? He's killing lizard men and he is, you know, checking out the talking cats and stuff like that.
I mean, I would just say let things go horribly south. Let your characters do their murder hobo best and have the repercussions come back to affect them while they're trying to run this castle. I'd say when the characters leave the castle to go on adventures to do other things, if they're not leaving any of the players behind, then there's no guarantee that they're still going to have a castle when that a castle that's still under their control when they get back. So I don't know. I'd say just roll with it, keep true to the story, and yeah, I don't know. That's really it.
So the only frame of reference I have for this is AD&D, because we would always strive for, hey, when I get up to this level, I can start my own church, or I can have my wizard tower when I get up to 10th level. And I haven't really ever seen aspirations like that going on with characters in DCC.
Yeah, it's a different...
But if they do, not only would they, you know, you'd have to leave a seneschal or some, you know, similar station. You'd have to have somebody there that you absolutely trust to run everything for you if you're ever going to leave again. Otherwise, you could just turn yourself into an NPC. On the other hand, if they really want to have fun with it, I would say let them make their own tables akin to those in the Dawn Stroud and Pozzanel book.
Lesser Key to the Celestial Kingdom.
Thank you. I keep forgetting the last part. In the Lesser Key there. And make up tables for all of the nuances that would go on in daily life. Have them pretty much run it on their own, but still on a randomized basis to keep it in the spirit of DCC.
Also, another thing I would throw in there is, you know, in DCC, you are plane hopping and fighting dragons and demons from first level. There's no reason why you can't have a castle at first level too, or a wizard tower or a whole barony at first level.
Fair point.
If it makes sense in the story that this becomes yours, go for it. And this isn't like AD&D where once you reach a certain level, you are now entitled to your piece of land and your set of followers. DCC doesn't work that way. At 10th level, all of it can come crashing down and you don't get any of it. Or at first level, you could have all of it. Like, just, yeah, I'd say just roll with it.
Yeah, the minutiae of just the idea of managing and ruling over a barony, I don't think any of that really strikes me as DCC.
No.
So, no, not the minutiae part. But remember, as soon as you get something cool like that, you've got to keep it, right? So
yes.
It's probably going to be more of a pain in the butt than a...
Yeah.
You know.
Yep. And as the judge, when they get something cool like that, do everything you can to try to take it away.
Oh, yeah.
You're so mean.
Yeah. I got a lot of dice.
It's dramatic tension. Yeah, like, that's what happens in any TV show. As soon as the character gets like the love of their life or the perfect job or whatever, then everything starts going wrong.
Yep.
Absolutely. It's what keeps things interesting.
Fair point.
Should I do the next one?
Sure.
This one comes in from Judge Marco. Hello, Spellburners. First off, I have to thank you for putting out such a wonderful podcast. I've been suffering from depression and anxiety attacks since January, sadly a recurring condition for me, and listening to your podcast while taking long walks has allowed me to weather the worst of my affliction so far. You are a wonderful team, old and new voices both, and you have made life a bit easier for me in these last few weeks. My illness sadly makes it hard to continuously concentrate and remember everything from the episodes, but I think I'm retaining enough for it to be worthwhile. Besides, once I am done, I think I'll go right back to episode 1 and start anew. While I'm a bit too young to have experienced old school gaming firsthand, having been born in 83, I fell in love with DCC the moment I heard about it. While current worldwide events keep me from starting to judge like I had originally planned this year, my gaming group's move to online play and teaching a new system over the net is a bit too daunting at the moment. I have found that many appendix and inspirations are creeping into my D&D 5e games, injecting the weird more and more and working hard to give each monster a fresh spin. That's all from me. I was thinking about a question I could ask you, but in the end, all I really wanted to express was my heartfelt gratitude. Stay healthy and sane, Judge Marco. Judge Marco, thank you so much for sharing that with us. I'm really glad that this show has been able to help you out in dark times. I know that I'm somebody who, in my dark times, I turn to media to help me out. Podcasts, TV shows, music, movies, literature, whatever. I fully get it. And I'm glad that we've been able to help you out during those. I'd also like to say I'm really glad that you're bringing the weird and the appendix set into your 5e games. If you did want to try DCC, though, I think you mentioned the idea of teaching a new system to your group over the internet can feel daunting. I think it's fine to. I often love playing with people who've never played a single role playing game before. And I don't then just like try to teach them the whole game. Just like as things come up, I tell them, okay, well, roll this thing. Okay, cool. So now you're going to roll this thing. Just tell me what your characters are doing and I'll tell you what to roll. Like to me, I feel like any role playing game you should be able to do that with.
Story is more important, role-playing right?
Game. Yeah, story yeah. First. Rules. Far, there's not even second. Rules are like 34th.
True, and you could start with two quick ideas. You could start with only two or three players, so you can, teach them. It'll be a lot easier to teach a small group, and you can have a lot of fun with a small group. There's no reason not to have a small group. Second idea, go to Ride a Cyclops Con, meet a bunch of DCC folks, and, people tend to break off into groups and subgroups, and you might start as a player. But things get kicked around, and after a couple months of playing with different three or four configurations, you're like, "Hey, I want to run some Starcrawl," three or four people are like, "Oh, I never played that. Hey, I always wanted to play that. Hey, I want to do a Purple Planet game. Hey, let's and then pretty soon you've got a game going. So meet people and things go from there.
Totally. And maybe this is controversial, but also if you're having fun playing your weird injected 5e game, then hell, keep doing that. That's cool too.
There's no wrong fun.
Yeah.
Well, maybe a little.
I do have to say though, we talk a lot on the show about alternative lifestyles, and this kind of strikes me as another facet of that. It took someone very important to me telling me it's okay to not be okay this year. To get me to stop beating myself up for not being okay. And on the gaming front for that, I will say this community is more supportive than any I've ever known, various levels. And, go to the Goodman Games website, toss your hat in the ring to be in one of Brendan's demo games. They're not, if I recall correctly, those are not streamed. So you don't have to feel nervous, but you'll be playing with somebody who knows the game inside and out and will make it a good time for you, and you'll learn a lot. And like Julian mentioned, stop by Bride of Cyclops Con, where the biggest group of DCC fans are going to be there. I know there's going to be nightly social hangout rooms. You can just kind of stay muted, even stay dark in the background, until you get comfortable enough to come in and say hello. And that goes for Marco. That goes for any of our listeners. Come on in. Yeah. You're always welcome.
Absolutely. And Jen, thank you for saying that. And Judge Marco, thank you for saying what you've been saying. Because I feel like there's so much stigma around depression or grief or trauma. And a lot of it, I also think it comes from outside, but it also comes from inside. It's this whole idea of God, just why can't I just get off the goddamn couch and stop feeling bad about myself or whatever? And it's like the reason why you can't is the reason why a person with a broken leg can't go running. Like right now, there is actually something, there's something that needs to heal and needs to, there's a process that the person has to go through. And I love that Judge Marco's talking about this and Judge Jen, you're talking about this, because I also feel like there might be people who are listening who might be struggling with something. And hearing people talk about it very frankly also, I think, makes other people feel safer to be exactly where they're at.
Safe is a good place.
Yeah.
Comfort is a happy place. Yeah. So you guys rock. We probably have time for a couple more if we want to dig in.
Yeah. Let's try. Let's go for it.
Let's go for it. Next one is Pierre Ledoux de Gravelat. Good afternoon from the jungles of Florida. Greetings, judges. I am half a century young gamer from Paris who long ago got lost in the jungle of Florida and made a home. I have owned the DCC core rulebook for a long while, but only jumped to judging the game 2 weeks ago via Discord and soon to be via Roll20. Once the plague abates, I plan on proposing a regular open game to my FLGS. I started reading the core rulebook during March of 2020 and found that bound that I was to my backyard deck and fell in love with the tone of the game. It is everything D&D was to me in the late 70s and so much more. I also discovered your most excellent podcast and undertook its listening from episode one, jumping only to the last three for a moment to keep up to date. I wanted to thank you warmly for this opportunity to lose myself in a game I now love while I work out my surgically enhanced back, cook, take long walks in the night jungle, or paint the mounds of miniatures populating my game room pile of shame. You are a huge moral support in these times of uncertainty. Having suffered from anxiety and depression for about 40 years, I cannot tell you how much your daily company helps me through many a day. Thank you. Now for my question. I'm hugely attracted to The Peril on the Purple Planet and was wondering if you know if this title would be republished in box form / large hardcover or any other format. If not, is it so good that I'm okay to spend the $170 price tag on eBay? Also, now that Google, the G Plus communities are gone, where's the best new refuge of DCC addicts online, or at least the one you favor? Also, what is your advice for an aspiring DCC compatible setting author? I have had this idea trotting in my head for years, but never found a system that would fit. Thank you for your time, Pierre Ledoux de Gravelot. Magen, do you have any inside baseball on the Purple Planet? I don't have any knowledge like that.
Logic says that it would be next since the Chained Coffin got the treatment of binding everything together, all of the materials into one hardcover. The one thing that came up in conversation was that there are multiple authors involved with that project, as opposed to everything from Chained Coffin being solely Michael Curtis. So I don't know what kind of deals need to be worked out on that end, or, you know, what would be going on with that. As for the other questions, I will first disclose that no, we did not rig these emails in any sort of
order.
It's 2020, man. Depression's a damn theme. We got to live with it. It sucks, but we got to live with it. And it sure as hell beats the alternative, so we're happy that you are with us. D&D or DCC Addicts Online, you can pretty much hit what the Facebook group is the largest, DCC RPG Rocks. There's a group on number of groups on MeWe. There's a bunch of individuals you can find on Twitter. You know, start with looking for Spellburn and then go from there. Follow all of Spellburn's followers. You'll get full.
There's also Discord.
That's true. Discord's a flavor. It's an acquired flavor.
Yeah. I'm not 100% sure of this. I'm on MeWe, but I believe that a number of DCC folks who are on Discord is probably roughly equivalent to the number of people who are on MeWe. I feel like the DCC,
the G Plus group too,
really fractured and half went that way and half went the other half.
Yeah, sadly.
And the DCC RPG Rocks group is great considering that it's Facebook.
Yeah. Yeah,
but there, otherwise
there's very few guidelines.
What does that mean as a non-Facebook person?
There are people who just don't like Facebook altogether because of the identity. You know,
that's not what I mean.
No?
What I mean is I feel like people get real trolly on Facebook and also get like real like their head up their butt and feel like.
Okay, so other people don't like Facebook for those reasons too. Sorry.
It gets real snarky and
keep politics out of it and we can all get along. It's pretty much the same rule I have at my tables. As far as advice for an aspiring DCC compatible setting author, send in an email. Tell them what you have in mind and they'll ask for a copy of it to preview before you put it out. That's pretty much how works.
You're gonna, I would say, especially a setting type thing, you're gonna plan on learning to do layout and organize some art and that kind of stuff. And yeah. Well, it's actually a very rewarding thing, and you can do it, you know, very low. You can do it kind of 80s-ish, zine-ish, and very low production values. And if that's your thing that you enjoy, or you can of course do it really crazy full color art and, you know, go totally nuts if you like. Yeah. So.
Oh, and you can also get Purple Planet Publications on the Goodman site. At least you can get PDFs.
I was just about to say that, and I just pulled it up. It's $30
for the PDFs.
The PDF for Purple Planet is $30.
Because there, no, there's the compendium and an almanac. It's like three or four pieces.
Yeah, I mean,
I'm not paying $30 for any PDF.
But it's the box set.
All right. Yeah. Would you pay $10 for an adventure? Because there's like four adventures worth of content in there.
That's my point.
Yeah,
maybe.
Yeah.
My initial reaction would be like, oh, F this. And I would just click right off if I saw a $30 PDF.
Does that mean you're not getting me the $170 Purple Planet box set for my birthday, Jeff?
I mean, that's hardcover, or in a box at least. It's tangible, right? Not hardcover.
Well, because that's what I was going to recommend. I was going to say, go buy the PDF, and if you fall in love with it and like you really feel like you need to have it and it feels like $170 worth, do it. But now I don't know if I'm going to make that recommendation.
Or see if it's on drive-thru and wait for a sale.
Yeah.
Or wait for a sale on Goodman.
If you ask me, is it worth $170 for the hardcover, for the
box set?
I would say it all depends on how many millions of dollars you have in the Pierre actually did. I did email him back immediately and said, hey, you're going to have to wait many months, but come over in MeWe. We're over there, and we've had some MeWe discussions, and he's a really nice guy. So, hello, awesome. Pierre.
Oh, that is cool.
Oh, and also, Pierre, thank you for discussing your anxiety and depression as well. I didn't want to gloss over the fact that we just thanked the previous person, and then you're also talking about it. So,
that's why I was like, we did not stack those emails together, yeah. I promise.
But thank you both for talking about what you're going through. I think it's going to help a lot of people who are listening.
Well, and we're starting to catch up. We're with it. Once I read this next email, we will be within 3 months of catching up to our entire inbox.
Nice.
Not bad.
Not bad.
All right. This last one comes from Judge Roger. I just wanted to throw my 2 cents into the elf discussion. In a campaign of mine a long while back, all the elves were forest dwellers. Long story of how it happened. Basically, humans are reckless. Elves went back to the old ways of the forest. I had a player that wanted to play as a highborn noble elf that was from a large elven family, lived in castles, and all of that. That didn't fit right with the campaign, so we decided, since I was going to start off the campaign with a storm and a shipwreck just outside the starting town, that he would be from exactly the place he wanted, from far across the seas.
Yeah.
He washed up on shore with nothing, all his shipmates being lost, and was effectively the only elf that had acted completely differently from all the others. The role-playing was great when everyone expected him to know how to hunt and such. Meeting other elves was great, as there was always the interesting conversation about why he was dressed the way he was and how the elves here all lived in trees. Why not cut down all these trees and build a lavish wooden house? Then, years later, when the campaign wrapped, my friend ran in one in the elven world where we had created, or that we had created in my campaign. It worked out great, and it all started with a player that most definitely did not want to play a typical elf in my world. Not saying that it works every time, but I think sometimes it's worth a try. And the TLDR version of this is sometimes letting a player play their character completely opposite of your world's norm can turn out great.
Heck yeah.
All right. Thank you, Judge Roger. That is actually an awesome note and a fairly decent place to stop. At least in this box. Yeah. All right. Mailbag show number 10, The Revenge. I don't know what's next, guys, but there's going to be a whole lot of gaming online coming up in the near future. Just to run through this list, I've got some links for you in date order. Hey, I've got this chronologically listed for you. We've got TTRPG Pickup Con. It will be number 4, happening September 19th and 20th, and it's a monthly thing. It'll go one weekend a month, completely free to everybody. Get a lot of people who are brand new to RPGs in general there. We've got Con on the Cob, October 1st through 4th. AlbaCon, October 3rd through 4th. We have an Autumn Revel, which is the first of its kind, presented by Gary Con, October 9th through 12th. Coincidentally, the same weekend the Brinkmanomicon was supposed to be scheduled for. Sad face. Bride of Cyclops Con, one we've been touting all show, October 16th through 18th. Game Hole Con, November 5th through 8th. The Long Con, November 13th through 15th. And RPG Alliance Con, hosted by an organization in Albany, November 21st and 22nd. And we'll try to keep this list kind of updated because that's such an important part of keeping in contact with each other these days and getting the gaming going. Outside of that, if you want to fill up the mailbag monster again, you know the drill. Email us at theband@spellburn.com. Leave us iTunes reviews. Crowdsourcing bumpers is still kind of a thing. It's not just all Harrison's job. Again, Facebook, Twitter, Discord, MeWe. We're trying out the UMe.social thing, individually at least. Who knows how it'll work? Any last words, gentlemen?
Game on. Thank you, Harrison.
Yeah, you rock, Harrison.
And thanks to our fans. I know our imaginary sponsors groan every time they hear us say it, but you can't split the party if the party is already split.
You've been listening to Spellburn. Copyright 2017. The theme song has been graciously provided by Glitter Wizard. Learn more at glitterwizard.bandcamp.com.